Susie.
Happy days are here again.
Uh-huh, they sure are. It's starting to look like summer outside. I ain't got no work. I ain't got school.
She's unemployed.
And my drawers are getting organized, people.
That is so fun. I was just having a conversation with myself. This is episode 328. And I was thinking of like, what do I enjoy doing? And one of the things is organizing my house.
Oh, it's like the best. And now
Does that count as a hobby though? Can it be?
Well,
come on. It brings me joy.
It could be. I think, why not? I think more than anything, it does that thing that we were talking about a couple episodes ago, or maybe it was last episode, about how it puts your brain on like autopilot so that you could do other thinking.
Good point.
So really good for us.
Yes, I agree. Because I do it in silence. I don't have music on
same,
or anything.
Same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fun. And so maybe soothing.
There's something about... You know, like organizing a drawer, you don't have to think too much. You know, it's like pretty basic. Put the shapes together, sort them by, you know, whatever subject matter, whatever you do.
Do you think that people that, you know how some people are just kind of naturally sloppy?
Ugh,
do you think
yes,
that...
I do.
Do you think that they're usually just laid back and they're not bothered by stuff? Or do you think it's a reflection of their inner mind?
Ooh. Well,
I don't judge either way. I'm just curious.
Do you see people who are highly, like, I would like to know what the organizational just habits of people who are in, you know, the highest earning or like, you know, have the best jobs and are like the smartest out there.
Well, I know for sure that academics are often very disorganized.
Yeah, that's true. And then I think of all those like agents, like those old school New York agents who like who have that like teeny tiny office. You open it up and just like stacks of paper to the ceiling.
It's like Joey Tribbiani's agent.
Yes, exactly. That is what I think.
Right.
I don't know how successful Joey Tribbiani's agent was.
True. But the scholars, they're very productive. They're super bright, but they prefer kind of chaos a bit.
Yeah, but
I don't get it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But that's very, you know, it's very specific. You're in your limited world that where you, you know, maybe a lot of times our academics aren't finding like huge financial success. Maybe in order to,
well, that's for sure.
You know, oh, I'm sorry to break it to all the academics out there. But, you know, maybe in order to, like, I look at somebody like Arianna Huffington, there's no way her drawers are not full, like, neat.
Yeah, or Oprah.
Oprah definitely has folded drawers.
Right.
You know, so maybe, like, I don't know.
I wonder, though, what causes what, you know?
Yeah.
What the causation is.
Good point.
Is
so maybe it's all just type A people who, like, need it to be like that. And we're all just driving ourselves crazy. In fact, my therapist was the one who told me that, like, prescribed me dirty dishes in the sink.
Oh, no.
She was like,
nope.
Just leave them.
Nope.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
I know. It's hard.
Ugh.
Well, her first suggestion was... lazy wrapping of Christmas presents. Like, don't put any effort in. And I was like,
that's cruel. Because you're super into that.
Right. She's like, that's not what matters. And just try, but I get the point she was trying to make. And I did do the no wash that, like, just leave the mess. I was like, I get it, but I can't do it.
So, oh my God. We should take a poll. Have Dahlia take a poll on Twitter about, like, tidiness versus, I don't know.
There's
orderliness versus mess and what people prefer.
And then, but some people, like, you and I enjoy cleaning up.
I really do.
The mess. And I go crazy if it's not clean.
More like Monica Geller. There's so much Friends referencing.
Oh my gosh, so many. So much.
Anyway, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing well, Suze. I do have an update. I've been thinking a lot about she's a genius, like, we're genius and she.
Oh, yes.
Remember how we talked about that?
Yes.
So we said
the theory was that people tend to not use the word genius for women.
Yes.
Okay.
Correct. And
what's your thought?
I've been listening to people say that word in reference to women. Like when you talk about when, but they don't get too excited, Suze. Oh. This is what they say. That's a genius idea. Yep. Without exception, mm-hmm. that's what I've heard. Oh my gosh, that's a genius idea. Not she's a genius.
You're a genius.
I heard like three or four people, enough to where I started taking notes in my phone and texting myself when I heard this. Three times.
Sarah, that's interesting.
And then one that I didn't write down.
I hope people pay attention in their own lives and see if that is consistent with what they find.
And then I found myself doing it. I said, oh, no. Oh my God, that is a genius. What was it about? Oh, I don't know. But that I do have a genius idea that I want to share.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe this is what I was thinking of too. When I was, there is a school, I mean, it's super simple. So I can't believe nobody thought about this before. There is a school, where they're taking the leftover food from cafeteria lunches and boxing them up as like almost like those HelloFresh or like whatever, those prepackaged ready-made meals to go, and sending them home with kids on the weekends.
That's brilliant.
Brilliant.
And I love that they're doing several things that are good. They're preventing waste.
Yes.
And they're helping people not starve to death.
Yeah. Isn't that a great idea?
Love it. I love stuff like that.
That is so smart. It's Elkhart School District of Indiana, and they just salvage their wasted foods and package them up to take home on the weekends. It seems like a freaking no-brainer.
I love that. See, you're into good news lately.
I sure am. There's just so much out there. We have to read that to, like, you know, counter all the bullshit out there.
Well, you're reminding me to remind our listeners that HelloFresh is awesome. And if you guys haven't tried it yet, you should try it because it's really easy. It makes home-cooked meals doable because they package, as Sarah said, they send you a box of food with dry ice and everything's fresh, and there's a recipe. You can make the meal with your family. It's so easy and convenient. You don't have to go to the store. You can choose between classic, veggie, and family plans for your meals. And then you get to cook with your family, so it's still home cooked, but without all the bad parts of like shopping and dealing with figuring out what the recipe is going to be. So it's just really nice for people that are busy, which is all of us.
Yep.
And they gave our listeners a deal for a total of $80 off. That's $20 off your first four boxes. Visit HelloFresh.com/BrainCandy80 and enter BrainCandy80 at checkout. I did this for my mom for Mother's Day. And she's so excited and is using them. And it's like, she thinks she's like queen now. And again, that's $80 off. That's $20 off your first four boxes by visiting HelloFresh.com/BrainCandy80 and entering our code BrainCandy80.
I didn't even know that was our sponsor.
I know. When
that
you brought
like
it up, I'm like,
crazy segue that I like, how did I even know that?
That
I just
worked out
legit
great.
Wanted to talk about a genius idea.
I'm so glad you did. But I mean, it is a genius idea, and as is, you know, HelloFresh in general.
Yeah,
but
there you go.
I love that. They're helping people.
Yes.
Do you remember when I had texted you something and I said, remind me to talk about
yes.
this. And then you said, what was my thing?
I am going to look in our text message chain because that is exactly what reminded me about the genius thing, because I wrote to
yes.
you back and I was like, yeah, you have to remind me to talk about the genius thing. But
which
here's the problem with us.
I found it.
Oh, okay. I was like, we have so many text messages that
I can't find it. I wanted to do an update about the battle axe.
Oh,
theory.
Yes. Tell
okay,
me.
So Sarah had said that she would hear her husband using the term battle axe to describe women in business who are like hard asses.
Yeah.
And you pointed out to him that he doesn't use that for men. And I don't really ever hear that word, so I couldn't say whether I agree with your theory or not. And then the other day we were driving and we saw this old lady, this like rough and tumble lady driving. And Adam was like, look at that battle axe.
See?
And I said,
oh
my God, okay.
Break that down for me.
Have you ever used that word about a man? Is that gender neutral or is typically applied to women? He said, oh, it's always women. He agrees with you.
There you go. What the actual heck is that about? Where did that come from?
that's the thing. I think we need to explore the origin in order to know why it is attributed to women. Because I wouldn't have expected that.
There's got to be a historical reference.
Or, yes, or like some it must sort of
literary reference or something like that, right?
Right, but like, how did you pick up on that? That's so brilliant.
Oh,
you're a genius.
Thank you, Susie.
But seriously, though, how did you pick up on that?
Because I just kept on hearing him say it, and it sounded like one of those where, I don't know, I'm just really aware of gendered language in his world because there are so few females.
Yeah.
And I think in my world where it is so, you know, female dominant, this at my industry, that I don't hear those words. So I'm like, I pick up on it. And I can always tell when he's talking to a female or a male on the phone.
Ugh.
Yeah. I'm like, man, I wish that weren't a thing, but it is a thing. And everybody's
like that.
Yeah,
and not just for him.
No, it's everybody. Yeah, I can always tell when the person on the other end, I'm like, man, we cannot help ourselves. And I still don't know what to start a GD email with besides I'm just writing to dot, dot, dot.
I know.
I can't figure out what the hell, how to write an email.
Well, I remember when we first explored this idea of women using the word just too much when they say, oh, I'm just writing you, or I just need some help with this, to make their request seem smaller or whatever.
Yeah.
I had said, why do we always act like the male method, which is to just sort of spit it out,
is the right one?
Is superior.
Yeah, good point. Maybe we should do it like that.
Maybe they should be using just.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
I like that.
Instead of policing my own language and saying, well, I shouldn't word it like this because men don't do it, why aren't we asking men to be softer and, you know, make more qualifications in their emails? Let's do that.
Yeah. I agree.
Because that's the same argument a lot of people use about the word like and also vocal fry, to say just because... Basically, we don't like it because women tend to be the ones that do it.
Ew, ew, ew.
I have to disagree, though, about the like one because I understand their point, but I really hate the overuse.
And I have to disagree with the vocal fry one to you, too, because I freaking hate it.
Well, I read this article that was saying how nobody talks about how Howard Stern has really bad vocal fry.
Oh, I'm going to have to hear him again.
It's almost like it doesn't bother us when men do it.
Okay, I'm going to have to listen for this.
Right?
Oh, you know what's so funny? Speaking of male, like, and speaking and tone and all that kind of stuff, Landon gave me, as you know, Seuss, because you were there, Landon gave me a little speech, did a little speech at my graduation party. And then I don't know if he sent it to somebody or he was watching it, but he watched the video back of him speaking. And he was like, oh my God, I have such a feminine
cadence.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't believe it. I'm like, you don't know that that's how you talk? I'm like, that is the only way you talk. And I think
that's
that for the first time, he heard himself talk like that.
Really?
Yeah. And I was like, wonder you should have heard the first voicemail you left on my answering machine when we first started dating. I was really questioning your...
Can you recreate it?
Hi, Sarah. I'm just calling to tell you that I'm really excited about our date. And
that's nice.
I'm going to be picking you up. And I'm going to make sure it's extra special. And blah, 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 blah. And yes. And it's really cute. And I love when he talks to me like that.
Cute.
It's like my favorite thing. Like, yes.
Well, don't. When he discovered...
So gentle.
When he saw it in his speech, did he regret it or he just noticed it and he was neutral?
He noticed it and it was neutral. He was just like, oh my God, that is... Okay, I see that now.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I thought so
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he has a... like, I don't know if I'd call it a feminine speech pattern, but it's sing-songy.
It's sing-songy. That's it. And you know what? So do I. When I get up in like performance mode, I do the same thing.
Yeah, it's just animated instead of monotone.
Yeah, and everybody likes it.
I welcome it.
It's
kind of
like James. what's his name? Corbin, the guy on,
yeah, Corbin.
Yeah, right? Yeah. He's the English guy?
Yeah.
He's straight.
Yes. But yes, people often think that he has a feminine quality to him. Yeah.
And that's like my mm-hmm. husband. And he is the manliest man I know.
He's all man.
He's all man. I love you, honey. Just in case he's listening.
Right.
I'm about to head out on an 18-day road trip with this guy. I got to keep him in good graces.
Stay on good
terms. Myself in good graces, yeah.
Well,
or stay on whatever that phrase is.
If he is listening, he will be happy to know that you just got a special product called Omax O-Shot.
Yeah.
Hello.
Oh, yeah. As soon as I tried it.
Tell me. Everything.
It is lovely.
Tell me about the experience.
Well, I tried it. Well, first of all, I had to do it like by myself first, like just try it because I wanted to make sure, you know.
It's like when they tell you to put like a product on a small part of your clothing to test it.
Totally. It's just like that. So I had to try it out. Real and it's like subtle. It's not intense and overwhelming. It's like it just like lights you up a bit.
Just so you guys know, it's an O-Shot CBD arousal oil, and we found out that this is supposedly going to give you stimulation and circulation to your lady parts, but not that crazy, like hot and cold, overload sensory experience. And you're confirming to me that that is what you experienced. Yes,
exactly okay, that. Because I don't want that. And that's what Landon said. Landon was like, because I was telling him about it. And he's like, oh, I don't want anything that's going to be like burning. So I tried it first. And I was like, oh, no, this is lovely. Come over here, honey.
come to mama. Yeah, so it contains 8 natural botanicals that provide a sensory tingling and promote multiple physiological effects, but not that thing where it's too much, which is what I don't like.
I want the word multiple used in any sentence about my sexual enjoyments.
Yeah, man, you just put that a couple pumps of that on your area and let the fun begin.
Yeah, don't ignore the other areas.
Yeah, that's wherever you want it.
Yeah. That's
good point.
Yes.
Whether you're single or looking to spice up your relationship with a more satisfying sexual experience, every woman can benefit from a more enjoyable orgasmic experience. Well, that's for sure.
Yep.
Omax O-Shot comes to the rescue and provides heightened sexual sensations, which give you the instant and long-lasting satisfaction you're looking for. And it's 100% safe and natural. Remember to go to omaxhealth.com today and enter code BRAINCANDY to take advantage of the savings. Incredible savings. That's omaxhealth.com. And enter code BRAINCANDY to get 20% off O-Shot and all the other Omax products. So that's fun. Wow. Thanks for testing that, Sarah.
Yo, you're welcome.
Now I'll dive in. You're welcome. You're just doing the Lord's work over there.
You know, just take one for the team over here.
So I saw a documentary I wanted to tell you about.
Oh, I love a doc. Tell me.
Last week you had said, have you seen any good movies? And I thought, I better watch some so I can report to Sarah.
Good, I do need that.
On Netflix, there's a documentary, and I think it's called Lion Remastered, and then it's like the Lion Sleeps Tonight story about the song The Lion Sleeps Tonight.
Oh, one of the first songs I learned on the ukulele.
Yes. I mean, and it's such a fun song. Everybody knows it.
Which is your favorite part? Yeah, I was going to say. Is that your favorite part?
Gotta do the falsetto. Yeah. Oh. But I had no idea that there was even a story to be told, and that's why we love documentaries so much, is because the storytelling is incredible. And basically, the song originated in Africa. A singer there recorded it. It was improvisational, but have the recording of it, and they had done a bunch of them, and then with the Weemaway, but they called it Mdube, I believe. Is how they pronounced it, Mdube instead of Weemaway.
Mm.
And then at the end, the last take, he was like, just trying something different. And he added that part we all know. And it's really fun to hear. But then basically, just like every other story in the world.
Oh no,
white people.
I knew you were going to say that. Oh, freaking white people.
White people swooped in and decided to create a similar song, and that's how Weem Away came to be, and then eventually Lion Sleeps Tonight by the Tokens. And then after that,
it's
of course...
It's a white person who sings that song?
Like, yes.
Oh, God. I did not know that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And then after that, of course, Disney used it in Lion King, so that's when it really blew up, and it's in the musical as well. And so they're telling the story of the person that really wrote it and his family and how they did not profit from this multi-million dollar hit. And then what goes into that and all the lawsuits and who deserves the money. It's such an interesting story. And
that
it just
stuff just
yeah
makes me mad.
Yeah. They eventually did win a lawsuit. But it was kind of, remember how a few weeks ago we talked about when the Kenyan marathoners win all that money?
Yeah.
And there's no context or frame of reference or education about what, how long it will last and budgeting and stuff, because it's just not what they were used to financially.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like that, where they got their windfall, but then they think it's going to last forever, you know, and then it doesn't.
So. Yeah. Oh, and how, and then just to even have to shell out all that money to begin with to have a lawsuit.
Well, yeah, and even just the psychological and emotional toil that you go through whenever you are in, like, if you're some lady in Africa and you're suing freaking Disney.
Oh, come on. Right.
Good luck.
Good luck.
So it was difficult for them.
Man, well, I'm glad they ended up winning. That's interesting. There's also, there's a documentary on Netflix right now that I haven't watched yet, but it keeps coming up in like my recommendations, about a jazz musician that they say sold his soul to the devil. Have you heard this?
No, I don't think I did.
So he's like a young guy who had a lot of, I don't know, mental health problems, played the guitar, but not very well, and then disappears for like 2 years, maybe even less time. Maybe it was like 8 months, and then comes back. And he's insanely good.
Okay.
And then, like, his whole life starts to fall apart and the people around him start, like, all this bad stuff happens. But it's all, they like, this, like, the story is, where did he go in those, that however long he was gone? And, like, did he really sell his soul to the devil? What? So I'm going to have to watch that.
Oh, my God,
yeah.
Really?
It looked like, I was surprised this, I thought this was the one you were going to talk to me about. Because it totally looks like something you'd be into. And
I am.
Yeah. And it just seems so mysterious. Like and, oh, it looks so good.
Yeah, it's like a mystery.
Yeah.
But also includes the, that's also why I like Lion Sleeps Tonight one, is because I love when they go into like musical theory and how a song is created melody. And do you remember when there was that lawsuit where, I think it was other members of Creedence Clearwater Revival suing John Fogerty, saying he plagiarized himself.
What? Can you do
because,
that?
Like, well, they're trying to say
I
that
I hope
this
you
song
can't because there are
like,
a lot of papers that I have definitely copied my own works. It's like, it's not plagiarizing when that's my own words from another paper, right?
Well, there are people who say that that's unethical and that you should, even if it's yourself, you should cite where you said it before or something.
Yeah.
But regardless, Creedence was saying like his John Fogerty song sounded too much like the Creedence songs, but the Creedence songs were written by John Fogerty.
Yeah. What the heck?
Mm-hmm. So it's a weird.
So who won that?
John Fogerty won
that
one.
Good. Good. Man, bad blood with the Creedence Clearwater Revival people.
What did you say?
Like bad blood there.
Right. I'm trying to think of, why they would. Maybe it was, I don't know.
They don't like each other, huh?
Right. Now that I'm thinking about it, that is weird.
Yeah.
But John Fogerty won and he did not plagiarize himself,
It would be like if I went out and started a podcast after this one and then you sued me for sounding too much like Sarah from the Brain Candy podcast.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, that was 50% my voice.
Yeah, like you think of the law as being something that's pretty clear cut. But when it comes to who owns an idea, intellectual property, musical, what makes a song is it the three bars in a row that sound the same as this other song? Or is it the essence? Or you know what I mean?
What is the rule on that? Do you know?
Well, I think they take each one individually because, like, do you remember when the estate of Marvin Gaye sued Robin Thicke and Pharrell for using the blurred music lines. From... Yeah, in Blurred Lines.
Yeah.
And they had taken it from the Marvin Gaye song...
Got
to Give It Up. Yes, thank
you. Which is one of my favorite songs of all times. And then I was mad when it Blurred Lines sound like it because I hate the message of Blurred Lines.
Right.
It's about non-consensual sex, people.
Do you think that?
Absolutely. Blurred Lines.
Well, I mean, I agree. I'm just
the whole song. It's like, the whole thing is like, you know you want it, like, basically like,
what was their argument, though, that it was just like, it's just flirtation or something?
I don't know, but whatever it is not a good argument. I don't, I hate, I'm not, I hate it. I think it's so, nope, not happy.
No rape culture.
No rape culture. Boo.
I don't like that.
Boo. But yay, Marvin Gaye.
Yeah, and Marvin Gaye's estate won that one, too, because it was the same song.
Yes, it totally is.
But I think
is.
It can be... The Blurred Lines truly are about what makes a song a song and what makes you a plagiarist or not.
Like, you know, Ed Sheeran's, there's a song that he recently did that's got the same, I don't know if it's the beat, the melody, whatever you call it, you would know better than me, from No Scrubs by TLC.
Yes.
And he had to put...
And then he gave the money to them.
Yes. He had to add a credit. And I swear when I play it, I can hear No Scrubs, but Landon says he can't. And he thinks that that's dumb and that he can't even hear it at all.
Well,
I can hear it, but then it's one of those things.
You know when
like,
the singer's like, oh yeah, good point.
Yeah, exactly. But then I'm like, okay,
I don't think
it
was intentional.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
There are a lot of songs that sound like... I'm like,
Well, and that happens with comedy too, where you might not even realize you heard the joke before and that you're stealing because things get lodged in your brain and you might not know where they came from,
right?
But you're accidentally stealing.
Yeah.
I'm
sure I've done that.
After we're done here, I want to reward you with a little sip of our new Fit Vine wine. Have you heard of this?
No, but I'm in.
Oh, you are going to love this. I almost am like, this is too good to be true. So, you know how, like, you drink wine and then you regret it?
Oh, yeah, I'm familiar with that feeling. It's the week after my graduation, and I'm celebrating with everybody that I hang out with. I'm really regretting it.
Well, maybe you should crack open one of these because it's delicious and satisfying, but zero headache in the morning. Excuse me.
What? Yes.
It's like witchcraft. It's full alcohol wine, but it contains less sugar and fewer of the sulfites. No
flavor
additives.
Oh, I'm
going
to have to give this a taste test.
Right? And I had always joked with how, you know, I try to buy organic and I do my best at keeping organic stuff in the house. Mm-hmm. But like with wine, it was like a freaking free-for-all.
Yeah. I'll bet
and
you're
this
off.
Is lab tested for pesticides, mold, arsenic, and glyphosate.
Good.
And the good news is Fit Vine wine is available nationwide at Whole Foods, Albertsons, Total Wine, Kroger, your local liquor store, or you can get it at fitvinewine.com. And you receive 10% off your order when you use our promo code BRAINCANDY10. Shipping is free when you order a case or more. And I'm just so excited.
Done and
right,
done.
No, okay.
Okay. A but case of something like, I'm already going to be drinking? Yeah, I'll order that.
They say that it's perfect for people that are into fitness and want to have guilt-free wine without sacrificing your workout the next day. I mean, that's pretty awesome. So
yes. Ooh,
give that
a try.
I can't
wait to try this.
Mm-hmm. Cheers to that.
Cheers.
Okay, moving on. I wanted to make sure I told you about that documentary.
And about the wine.
What do you think about the Free Britney scandal?
Oh, I don't know about this scandal.
Well, have you seen the hashtag and stuff?
No, I haven't.
Britney.
I've totally missed out on all of this.
remember when she had her breakdown, of course, Britney Spears, and shaved her head and all that jazz?
I always say that the older I get, the more and more I go, I get it.
I get it. Me too.
I get it, Britney. I've had that moment where I look and I'm like, I could just grab scissors right now, cut off all my hair. I'll just have it crazy. Then maybe somebody will listen. I know.
Well, it's the same thing as how we clean our house to soothe ourselves. Like, it's cleaning. She was basically cleaning off her body.
Yep. Oh, my God. Okay. Yeah.
But then her dad became the conservator of her estate and her behavior.
And which is an easy thing to do.
No.
It is
evidence that there was a big problem.
Yes. And the courts are not just inclined to, they really try to keep
people autonomous.
Yes. So you have to, you get it.
Well, her situation, however, is unusual. And I was under the impression that everything was going well because she seems like something similar to her real self. You know, I mentioned recently that when I saw her carpool karaoke there, she did seem melancholy, but I didn't take it as she needs help. I thought of it as, you know, she's been through a lot and she's getting older and all that.
Yeah.
But then this Free Britney thing came into my world and I'm starting to think that something's really wrong there because she was taken into rehab in January and
for what?
Like exhaustion, mental health type stuff.
Okay.
And she now said to the judge that she was placed in there against her will, forced to take medicine, and she doesn't want her dad to be her conservator anymore.
Oh, I believe that. Oh my God. Yeah. Oh my God.
And she's the only person in America that has a conservator who is still able to earn a ridiculous amount of money. Like usually these people can't really earn money.
Oh my God.
She's
this is something.
Only one.
She needs to get a conservator who doesn't have any financial, anything to be gained. She needs like
somebody without an interest.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Like an advocate, like a,
yeah.
Oh my God. And I know how fucked up parents can be like that. Like,
yeah. And
I believe I'm on
the
Britney's
hashtag.
Side.
Yeah. And I also heard that like when you tweet or write about it, sometimes her mom and brother will like when people talk about Free Britney because they want her to get out.
Oh.
Like the dad is the problem.
Okay. This is a thing.
Yes.
Dude. And I think it's probably worse than whatever we think it is. Like
when she walked out of the courtroom. Barefoot, though. Right? And it scares me. Like, is she being medicated in a weird way?
Okay. I got to look up this hashtag right now.
Sarah's on the case.
I am on the case. Wow. I'm going to have to listen. Yeah. There are other podcasts about this. I'm going to have to listen to all this.
And people go to the courtroom with signs, Free Britney and all this
stuff. Yeah, listen to this tweet. Britney's allowed to stand in the middle of pyrotechnics, do aerial acrobatics without a net, and fly 60 feet in the air on cables, but running her own personal affairs is far too dangerous for someone of her capacity. Hashtag Free Britney. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Oh.
Yep. She says she just wants her life back and to be able to drive and stuff.
Oh, my God.
It's crazy, like a cult.
Yeah, it seems like that. And if you think about, like, the whole time where she was supposed to be building her identity, becoming autonomous, like being able to make decisions for herself, she was being run by parents, producers, managers. She didn't have any of that. So it's almost like you try and you can't, and then you try and you can't, so you stop trying. It's like learned helplessness. And, oh, fuck. Yeah.
Yep. And it makes you question your own sanity too.
Yeah.
When everyone's saying, you're not well, take this medicine, get into rehab, all that. Then there are probably moments where you're like, wait, am I crazy?
Yeah.
Like you start to not know what's real.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. It's
scary. And then with all, it's one of those things where like everybody else is after you or wanting a piece of you and they don't know the real you. So the people in your life, even how, no matter how fucked up they could be, they are maybe hint at seeing the real you, or like, no, you know, they were with you since the beginning. You feel like you'll take whatever you can get, because at least they're not these, you know, vultures who are like in the public who want mm-hmm. a piece of her. You know what I mean? That's, I did a bad job explaining
yeah.
that. Yeah. Oh, you'll just,
isn't that yeah, sad?
You'll just take whatever you can get.
Whether she is sort of being controlled unnecessarily, or if she is really sick enough to need that, either way, it's sad.
Yeah. Because I do see a little bit of that. It's not even melancholy. I know what you're saying. It's like a
hollow.
Yes. It's like you're checked mm-hmm. out. Like she's
not there.
And I don't know if that's medication. It almost seems right. like a lithium kind of like, I don't know, like side what you'd be situation. On if you had like bipolar disorder.
Which she might have that, and she may need yeah. certain medication, but it does feel like something ain't right with this situation.
Yeah, man, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. Well, hashtag free Britney.
We're on board.
Super on board.
It took like two paragraphs for me to be like, oh, yeah, yep. she needs to be freed.
Oh, my God.
Because
I went to one of her shows in Las Vegas probably like 10 years ago
how
now.
How was it?
Not good. Yeah.
Why? Because she was out of it?
Yeah. It was when she yeah. first like came back on the scene. Before she had a standing show at Vegas, you know.
Who did you go with?
It was for MTV. We were there for an MTV event, and it was like the one time I actually felt like an MTV celebrity, because they had us with all the people from like MTV News and the wow. Jersey Shore, and I got to hang out with like all the cast members from the Jersey Shore. Like I did that one time, and yeah, claim to fame.
Which
people.
One did you get along with?
No, you know who was great was was it Polly? No, not Polly DJ Polly D. The other one. The one who's...
Situation.
Nope, the other one. He's like real normal looking.
Anymore.
Crap. He's not the big guy. He's
his name
Polly's,
Joey?
He's Polly's friend. What the fuck is his name? Oh. Well,
it
the other one.
It makes sense, though, that the least memorable
yeah,
one
he was just
is
totally
normal.
Normal and nice and polite and really respectful. I'm like, yeah, he's great.
Aww.
The heck is his name? Who knows?
But you forget him. So soon you forget.
Because he was normal. Yeah,
well,
I don't know.
So, something else that's normal is wanting to have a baby.
That is normal. I want one of those.
Sarah wants to have one. And now, thanks to modern fertility, there is a comprehensive fertility hormone test for women that does not cost $1 million. I'm so excited about this.
Well, thank goodness.
Did you take your test?
Oh, no, not yet, because I keep
God.
I keep missing
yeah, you
my
keep
window.
Missing the window. Yeah.
Gosh, I have to pay attention to that. Well, I mean, it's only been 1 month, so. What?
I took mine.
Oh, how'd it go?
So you just do this little tiny finger prick, you know, like you would for diabetes type of stuff. You get a little bit of blood, and then you send it off, and they test it, and they send you your results, and everything's ship shape in there. That's what I found out.
Oh, Sue's good. You should try to have another baby. Do you know I was going to say that?
Can you? Yeah, because can you imagine the shit show if both of us got pregnant? Oh, my God.
Oh, okay. We should just try to do that again. You know what? Maybe that's like what was supposed to happen all along. Oh,
maybe.
Because we talked about that before. Oh, my God. I would die. We could both be miserable together. No. Yes. Let's use our modern fertility so I can find out the health of my insides, too.
Here's the scoop. It's a fertility hormone test, which aren't covered by insurance. So usually you'd pay $1,500 for
good
this.
To know.
It's just $159, and they give you a full report about how many eggs, you know, do you have more eggs than normal? Do you have fewer eggs than average? What could you expect from IVS or egg freezing? How are your hormone levels relating to like PCOS? And your just general hormone health. It's just so great that you can do this and be affordable and find out what's going on in your body, whether you want kids or not. It's just good to know. And they have a deal for you guys that is to take the fertility quiz and you get $20 off your first kit at modernfertility.com/braincandy. So take that fertility quiz and you get $20 off your first kit at modernfertility.com/braincandy. So
well, maybe I'll start there, Sarah, with my fertility quiz.
Yeah, take the quiz.
I think after all that grad school testing, I was like, don't test me on anything else. And now I've been out of it for a week and I'm like, God, I missed some testing. Give me a quiz. I need a quiz right now.
Yeah, so that's cool. Do that. And maybe everyone will get pregnant and we'll be responsible for a brain candy baby boom.
Baby boom. Oh my God, the smartest babies. We'll just come out with onesies like crazy.
Okay, Sarah.
Yes.
We have a guest. Well, we have two actually. Ooh. A double whammy.
And these are the kind of guests that when they come over, you don't have to clean your house for them.
Right. This is the best kind of guest.
And I feel like these guests are especially wouldn't care because of the show that they host.
That's right. Catherine and Mara host a show, a podcast, which I think it's funny that I'm not a podcast person. Like, I don't get into them.
That's but
this
so weird.
One, I know. It makes no sense. But this podcast is my favorite. It's called 714 Delaware Street. And here's what's so awesome. Both of these women are academics. They met in grad school. One of them has a PhD, and I think maybe the other one has a master's, but she might have a PhD too. But regardless, they're academics and they're brilliant, but they are applying their scholarly brains to unpacking the original Roseanne series.
Yes.
And the Conners and the reboot. And it is so fun. I love Roseanne. Were you always a fan? You were, right?
No, I was like later.
Okay. You were a late bloomer.
Yeah, I was a late Roseanne bloomer.
Yes. And I grew up with the show. I loved it because I grew up poor. And that was the only show really where people had the same income that my family did.
Yeah.
And I liked seeing that. That's when we say representation matters. This is kind of what it felt like for me, where I was like, hey, they have shitty furniture too.
Right.
And their dad's a blue collar worker and all that. I wish my mom were a little more like Roseanne, but now they actually share political, I was going to say,
maybe more alike than different these days.
Anyway, I just want to encourage everybody to check out 714 Delaware Street. It's on iTunes. It's just really fun. And they don't just look at Roseanne. They look at pop culture and other sitcoms and
I love it.
Things we grew up with watching. And they talk about the jokes. And it's fun, but it's also serious. And I just wanted to elevate these women because it's fun to support women doing cool stuff. So
bring them on out.
Welcome to the show, Catherine and Mara from 714 Delaware Street. Right, ladies, pressure's on. I have a lot of questions. Thanks so much for coming on Brain Candy Podcast. I'm honored.
Thank you for having us.
So <Exciting. laughs> I am a huge fan of 714 Delaware Street podcast, which is all about Roseanne. And I think it's so fun. And I'm dying to know, first of all, the genesis for the idea. How did you guys decide to do this project?
Do you want to answer that, Mara?
Sure, I can answer. So, Catherine and I have known each other for a very long time now, I think over 10 years. And yes. We met in graduate school. And I studied film studies and she studied literature, but we were in a lot of the same courses and we ended up in a television studies course together. And of course, that led to us discussing Roseanne, because we both love it.
Of course.
And so over like our whole time of knowing each other, we talked occasionally about Roseanne, but then we were at our friend's wedding, I guess it was a year ago, and we started talking about the reboot and how much we liked it and just like the different issues that were coming up at the time. And we were like, we should totally have a podcast. There may have been alcohol involved in this conversation.
There was definitely alcohol involved. I was very drunk.
I think that's true for the beginning of all podcasts.
It seems like it might be, yeah. Well, there's been kind of a history of us, ending up in a corner talking about television at parties anyway, because we both kind of have a love for the sitcom genre, which isn't necessarily that, I think, common amongst academics. Everybody wants to talk about dramas, The Wire, et cetera. And I'm like, have you seen The Middle?
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. So you bonded over this shared love of sitcoms and especially Roseanne.
Yeah.
And then made this drunken deal to make a podcast, but then you actually went through with it. And what was your vision for, here's what we want the show to be, or the podcast to be?
Catherine?
You didn't have a vision.
I don't even know if we have a vision yet. I mean, we're going on 30 episodes-ish, recorded, not necessarily posted. And still, I think we kind of play it by ear every time. Our first few, I want to say our first two or three episodes, we kind of just talked about the episodes up close. And we did a little too much of, and then this happens, and then she says this, and then, oh my God, you, and then she's wearing this shirt, which is still really fun, but we've kind of loosened up and just started talking about, like, concepts and characters, and just, I think the vision a little bit is to reconcile our love of this show, and the fact that I almost feel like I grew up in that house.
Yeah, me too.
With, you know, what's happened with, of course, the star and all of what she's about or has become about. But sort of reconcile the age-old question of, like, what do you do when the artist of art that you love is problematic?
Yeah.
Those kinds of things. So we do ask questions about that along the way because we're invested in being anti-racist, anti-homophobic, anti-transphobic, et cetera. But we also just love the show. So we end up giggling a lot.
Well, it makes me giggle, and I'll be listening with my headphones on and my husband will be in the room and he's like, what are you listening to? But when you guys do go through the old episodes and redo the jokes, it makes me laugh all over again because they're so freaking funny.
I know, there's so many great lines. It's like, it's hard for us to resist quoting them. I'm glad that you enjoy that and you're not like,
I love it. Those are my favorite ones.
Good. Yeah, well, we love doing it because of that stuff. And, you know, discovering, because we're looking more closely at it, that, you know, the writing, unsurprisingly, of the original series is done by some of the most prolific TV writers who have become some of the most successful TV writers and producers, showrunners, creators in TV history, right? So, like, Amy Sherman-Palladino.
Yeah.
And Judd.
Joss Whedon.
Joss Whedon, thank you. Those guys. So,
You know, it's
Sid Youngers and all of that.
It surprises me, though, when I think about the legendary sort of strife that existed on set at that time with the writers and Roseanne and producers. And it surprises me that they were able to make such a high quality product given the turmoil that they were apparently in at the time. Does that surprise you?
Yeah, I think it definitely surprised me when I read about all of this. And one of the reasons we want to do the podcast, or one of the reasons we bonded over Roseanne, was that I actually wrote my master's thesis on Roseanne.
Oh my God, I have to read it.
You know, people
it's amazing.
Sometimes want to read it, but I don't know. I feel like it's a little boring.
There's no way. I'd be so into it.
Well, yeah, I can send it on over. But basically, I read all of this stuff about it. The whole concept of it, I won't go too far into it, but like, you know, it talks a lot about just the struggle of Roseanne trying to achieve her vision in this really restricting genre, right? Mm-hmm. Like the family sitcom and the conventions of it are so overbearing that...
Yeah, and antiquated.
And so, but I do think like really Roseanne drove a lot of it. Mm-hmm. Although you can see in the early seasons that the point of view isn't as strong. And I think that's because of all the difficulties with head writers before the show was really successful and Roseanne was able to get her way more, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It and then evolved. By the end, it's just like so clear that she's like wielding her authority over the show in ways that are, you know, in like season 6 and 7, 5, 6 and 7 are like amazing. But then it kind of goes it goes a little weird toward the end. Mara has an amazing theory about that you have to read.
Will you give me a preview? Because I'm dying to know.
Sure. Well, yeah, my whole theory. So my thesis is largely about season 9, which is everyone's least favorite season of Roseanne. Yeah. It's totally off the wall because they win the lottery and then they have all these guest stars and Roseanne is like Rambo in one episode. I don't know.
Yes.
So basically my theory was, you know, Roseanne went through all of these struggles with the network and even into the time when the show was really successful where they didn't want to let her tell the stories, you know, of like working class people and like they didn't want her to tell it from a woman's perspective and they wanted her to tone down all these different things. And basically I thought season 9 was her saying, oh, okay, now I'll give you what you really wanted, which is this sitcom about like a very affluent family and they go on all these trips and there's like all these event episodes, you know.
Has she alluded to that?
No.
I love it.
My own interpretation.
Because I always thought that it was the opposite, where she had removed all the dissenters, people that fought with her so much that she wasn't able to get critical feedback. And so then she didn't have anyone saying, this is ridiculous, don't do it. But your theory is far more interesting.
Yeah, my theory is more trusting of Roseanne Barr right. as a person. I'm not sure that, you know, we should trust her, but
well,
but yeah, I think one of the reasons that I thought that was because the show is so, it references television conventions constantly, and it's referencing like old sitcoms and things, and so she's clearly obsessed with television and like television tropes, and there's a lot of those that come up in season 9. So
okay, that's interesting. All right, I look forward to delving into that more when I get my copy of your thesis. But how do you feel about the reboot? People will want to know because obviously you're very nostalgic about the original show, and did it for you hold up in the reboot edition?
Yeah,
I think it kind of depends on if you're talking about season 10 or if you're talking about the Connors. And I think both have their merits. We talked in a couple of episodes about how we felt like the Connors season 1 actually sort of reflected a more conservative viewpoint than season 10 with Roseanne Barr. And we didn't want to like delve into each individual episode of season 10 because there's something a little too that affords her a little too much legitimacy doing that. And right now, I'm mad at her.
Yeah.
like really, really mad at her. So, but there's no denying she's a great actress and the character is still really interesting. And, you know, as much as we hate it, there is some sense that, you know, a shift to the right is a possibility for a character like Roseanne Connor.
Yeah.
And they did it kind of honestly, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to the question about how we started the podcast, you know, when we were talking about doing it, Roseanne hadn't, you know, tweeted her racist comments yet. And like the whole fallout hadn't happened. So we were like, talking about how much we actually really liked the reboot and we thought it was really interesting. And then the whole thing happened and we were like, oh man, can we still do it? But we thought that it would be a good idea to talk about, you know, how Roseanne's actions affect our interpretation of the show, but how it's still worth talking about and how it's still like a good, I mean, it still has its merits basically.
Does the fallout recently with Roseanne affect how you process your enjoyment of those reruns from back in the day, or is it sort of separate?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think one of the things we wanted to do was be, you know, have something of a critical eye. Obviously, we're really celebratory about a lot of the classic episodes, but to look for, you know, and be truthful about things in the old series that may be pointing to this kind of like conservative bent or this that could be potentially problematic.
Yeah. And did you discover anything?
Something. There's a sort of imperiousness to Dan sometimes.
Yeah.
And there's a real sort of, there's a vein of narcissism in Roseanne Connor that sometimes points to, you know, just the unapologetic, like, non-reflective way that Roseanne Barr has dealt with, you know, criticism about her shift to the right, too. So sometimes, yes, but sometimes it's just like, I feel like I'm watching my mom when mm-hmm. I was a kid. The nostalgia is so rich.
Yeah.
Well, and like Catherine said, like the reboot, one of the things that I think we've discussed personally, not on the podcast, but that we liked about the original reboot was that it was kind of emotionally realistic, like for a lot of people who have maybe a parent who's become like a Trump supporter who used to be more like progressive. And it's really shocking. And how do you reconcile that with someone that you love and you thought you understood, you know?
Oh, believe me, my mom's here right now and I'm feeling it. I'm lucky she didn't bring her MAGA hat with her on this trip. But that's really hard for a lot of people to deal with, but you still love that person. And I do feel like that about Roseanne.
Yeah. The thing, I have a ton of very conservative family members too. You know, I'm from Colorado and a big chunk of my family are Mormon, and Mormons are generally really conservative. The support of Trump is weird to me because Mormons are so conservative in these specific ways. But like, it's a shock with Roseanne because I grew up with her as someone who was sort of like a lefty icon. You know, mm-hmm. she was like LGBTQ friendly, or so we thought. You have to leave the T out of that.
Yeah.
Right. Something that we've come to realize. But she also had, you know, some, I would call for the 90s anti-racist episodes. You know, she was such a feminist.
Yeah.
And there was, you know, I remember when she sang at the national anthem. Well, she sang the national anthem, not at it. But she, you know, my conservative family were ready to tar and feather her.
Right.
For that, you know? And so now there's this shift where, you know, she's become the opposite of who I thought she was.
Yeah.
And so the loss there almost hurts more than knowing that my family members who are always conservative are Trump supporters, because of course they are. I'm not surprised by that. That's how that works, you know?
Yeah, but so, she seems to have changed, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know what you just made me think of is when she did the national anthem thing and, you know, obviously there was the backlash, then she at some point came out and said, that wasn't what I was doing. She had like an excuse for why it sounded like that and whatever. But then she kind of did the same thing with the tweet where she put out something that to most people seemed racist. And then now she's insistent that it wasn't meant that way and that she meant something completely different. Do you think this is just a pattern where she does the thing and then changes the story of why she did it or what?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate that.
I don't think I think she's so prideful. You know, there's so much now, like before Trump was getting big, she was already a conspiracy theorist online, you know?
Yeah.
And she was, you know, very often talking about, you know, the global pedophilia ring and things like that, which, I mean,
she talks about it a lot.
That's real. I don't think there has to be a ring for there to be a global epidemic of people being awful
exploiting,
and gross.
Yeah.
But maybe there is, and you know, I'm naive or something, but, there's like I forgot what I was saying actually.
Well, you said before Trump, she was even getting into that. And we were trying to decide, like, does she do these things and then change the story how it happened? Or did she mean it that way all along? I don't know.
Well, I think she has a history of telling different stories.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I think we spoke about this on the podcast, but she has two different autobiographies. And they tell completely different stories about her life, you know?
Yeah.
And the idea is, well, you know, she's finally ready to tell the truth in her second autobiography, but, you know, it's not really clear which one is truthful and how truthful it is and, you know, that kind of thing.
It's a very odd thing, but what she has created with Roseanne is really special. And I'm so glad you guys celebrate it and then apply the critical thinking and, you know, the lens of, you know, progressivism to all of the things that she's done before and now with the reboot. I was wondering, Laurie Metcalf is a national treasure. Can we just say that before we?
Oh, yeah. God. She's the best.
She's amazing.
Everything she does is the best. And I love her with all my heart. Do you guys have a particular episode that's always been like the one that you love the most, or does it change for you?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of changes because there are heavier episodes that I really love, and then there are sort of funnier ones, you know, that I'll always remember. But I do really like the very heavy Jackie episodes where, you know, she's in the abusive relationship. And
when Dan grabbed that jacket to go kick that guy's ass, I mean,
yeah,
I was real happy.
Oh, yeah.
Because I wanted to have someone like Dan to kick someone's ass for me.
Yeah, exactly. And that was when Dan used his violence sparingly and only for good, which we talk about in the Connors is something that is a new really problem funny. With Dan's character.
Yes.
Yeah. He's having some aggression issues, which of course we forgive him for. He just lost his wife.
Yes.
True.
But yeah, like in the old days, Dan's size was something that everyone talked about and people were intimidated by, but he never really wielded the enormity of his body, except for that one instance where it's like, this is the exact reason to have a Dan, you know?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, I like those episodes. Sorry.
No, that's okay. I love those episodes. As far as Jackie, I think the one where she sleeps with Arnie.
Why Jackie becomes a trucker. Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's just so good.
And the one where they smoke pot.
Yeah, which we're planning to talk about soon.
Yeah. Yes, I can't wait. That's such a good one. Okay, now, moving on. What are your plans moving forward? Because you say you're finding your groove now. And as the show continues, because the Connors got renewed, right?
I think so, too.
They got picked up. So you're going to carry on and you're going to watch the Connors and unpack the episode still?
I think that's the plan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I hope we weren't totally thrilled with the Connors, but it's interesting.
I hate it. Yeah. There was a lot to critique. I felt, especially because it's new and everything's new to me and I don't hold it in the same kind of regard in my heart as the original series, I'm able to be more critical. I'm sure that people who are watching Roseanne for the first time ever, you know, because it's, you know, it's available for streaming and of course people are watching it because she's, you know, in the news and stuff, probably have ways to pick it apart. That I don't, but with the Connors, it's so new and it's got big shoes to fill.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're doing a decent job. But there are some things that I haven't loved. So.
Yeah.
Would you be willing to have some of the cast on your show? Do you think, or do you prefer to keep it just a critical eye?
Oh, I think we would have people
on.
Yeah, I think you should ask.
We actually have a friend who knows Lisey Goranson, and he was like, you should have her on, and we were kind of scared.
Really? She would probably do it, right?
Probably.
She probably would. Matt Schatz is the guy who wrote our intro music, and he's a playwright. Yeah. So he knows her through, you know, stage productions and things like that.
Yeah, let's make this happen.
I think she's aware of it.
Really?
Yeah, I think we were hoping that we could get some listeners and some episodes under our belt and then we might think about it, you know?
Right. Yeah. I got you. Well, I mean, Michael Fishman follows me on Twitter, so I can send a good word to him.
Oh, perfect.
If you want to have him on. But that's all I've got in the way of connections. I did. I should tell you, though, this bit of trivia. I did. I used to host a podcast with Jake Pentland, who is Roseanne's son. And we would broadcast live. And one time we were on and I was talking about Catholicism and the Pope and stuff. And I'll be damned if Roseanne didn't call in. And she yelled and she said, Jake, quit talking and let the smart lady talk. And she meant me, you guys. She meant me.
That's so awesome.
But that's all I got otherwise.
Wow.
I'm just living through you guys, too. Well, maybe she'll call your show.
Susie.
I know. Right. I wish we had a way for people to call our show. Maybe we should start advertising that.
You need a hotline.
Sure,
we'll make it happen, though. We'll start like a campaign to get people on if you want guests. But otherwise, I think I'm excited for people to just listen to your show and hear the way that you describe the episodes. You are so joyful about the things that you love, but you also point out the things that aren't the best and analyze how it's evolved over time. And I just think it's a brilliant thing that you're doing, and I hope people love it.
Well, thank you so much.
Is there else you want to add before we go?
If you do listen, you'll have the joy of hearing Mara giggling.
It's the best.
Which is one of my favorite things in the entire world. Well, she's the funny one. And so, like, every time she laughs, I can't help but laugh.
Is funny as well. I feel like we've talked about a lot of serious issues today, but we talk a lot about a lot of pop culture, not just Roseanne.
Oh, my God, right. There's a lot of TV discussions. And Mara, I think, isn't there, like, other sitcoms you're super into that you, like, always bring up?
Oh, yeah, probably.
And I love that, too, because I love them.
I talk a lot about Who's the Boss.
Yeah. Who's the Boss? That's hilarious.
So, you know, if that's the only reason you listen, I'll try and throw something out there for people who are into Who's the Boss.
I just think it's great when really smart women can talk about things that everyone puts in the category of pop culture and is therefore unworthy of, you know, higher art criticism. I just love that you're doing the thing that I crave and I find so rare. So just keep up the good work. And it is funny. It's not all serious biz, I should say. You're right. It is super funny what you guys do.
Well, thanks. Yeah, we're really having fun with it. Yeah, and it's nice for us because we're friends and we don't live in the same place. So we get to talk to each other like every week or 2 weeks, and that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and you invite all of us to join
in. It's like a hangout.
I know. I feel like I hang out with you guys. And now I actually am. So this is super fun. But you're off the hook, and we'll have everybody listen to 714 Delaware Street. Are you guys on iTunes and everything? Yeah. Okay. So you're on the various podcast players.
Yeah.
I believe so. Yeah. iTunes. I don't think we're on Spotify.
Oh my gosh. We got to get you on there. I think you have to, like, it's like a whole process. It's a pain.
Yeah. Right.
But you're on iTunes.
We'll get on Spotify.
Yeah, make it happen. All the outlets. We have to, like, distribute worldwide, man.
Yeah,
I hope so.
Thank you guys so much for coming on the show. And everyone listening, please be sure to tune in and subscribe to 714 Delaware Street Podcast. It's so fun, especially if you love Roseanne, but really for pop culture enthusiasts and smart women and everybody. It's great. This podcast is brought to you by Wave Podcast Network. Check out all of our shows, including the Brain Candy Podcast, I Don't Get It, Coffee Convos, and Let's Talk About It.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.